This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Staying power. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, January 17th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
As the Omicron surge strains U.S. hospitals, the Surgeon General says it's not expected to peak in the coming days.
The hostage taker at a synagogue outside Dallas has been identified as a British man. We'll have the latest.
At least two people have been killed and tens of thousands left without power as a winter storm blankets the East Coast.
And President Biden's ongoing struggle to unite his own party.
President Biden's inability to convince moderate Democrats in the Senate to get behind this legislative agenda has ended up spoiling the president's goals.
Joey Garrison at USA Today on the president's failure to unite his party behind a tax and spend bill and a new push for voting legislation. The FBI says the man who took four hostages at a synagogue in Texas on Saturday is a 44-year-old British citizen. He was identified as Malik Faisal Akram. He died after a standoff that lasted more than 10 hours in the Dallas suburb of Colleyville. An elite FBI rescue team stormed the synagogue and freed the hostages. None were harmed. A Facebook post from Mr. Akram's brother said the hostage taker was suffering from mental health issues. The post was shared by the Muslim community in Blackburn, England. Rabbi Brian Strauss of Congregation Beth Yeshurun in Houston regarding the threat of anti-Semitic terror.
You know, since the Pittsburgh shooting a few years ago, the Tree of Life Synagogue, I think this is something that unfortunately is part of our lives now.
Mr. Akram claimed to law enforcement that he was the brother of a Pakistani woman convicted in 2010 of trying to kill U.S. Army soldiers in Afghanistan. Mr. Akram demanded that the woman be released from prison. Meanwhile, police in England have detained two teenagers for questioning in the Texas incident. The eastern U.S. is dealing with a powerful storm bringing heavy snow, ice, rain, gale force winds, and tornadoes. Tens of thousands of customers are without power from Georgia to upstate New York. Highway patrols reported hundreds of vehicle accidents and a tornado ripped through a trailer park in Florida. Weather Channel meteorologist Brian Hurley.
The Charlotte region, areas farther west, and also into upstate South Carolina, we saw some reports of over a quarter inch. In fact, some areas very close to a half inch of ice in upstate South Carolina.
FlightAware.com says more than 1,200 flights at Charlotte Douglas International were canceled yesterday. That's more than 90% of the schedule. Jackson, Mississippi saw trace amounts of snow early yesterday, while 25 miles to the northeast, Goshen Springs got 8 inches. The storm, called a Saskatchewan Screamer, left more than a foot of snow in Des Moines, Iowa over the weekend. Don't expect the Omicron variant to peak nationwide in the coming days. That's the message from U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy as COVID cases continue to rise and put more pressure on hospitals. Meanwhile, the 7-day average for confirmed and suspected COVID hospitalizations is at the highest recorded level, with about 156,000 reported yesterday. Still, public health officials say they are cautiously optimistic after COVID cases began to slow in some early U.S. hotspots. Dr. Ashish Jha, the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health, told Fox News Sunday that communication from the White House needs to be better.
Right now you have CDC, you have the White House, you have FDA, you have NIH. I think the White House needs to get its messaging discipline together, needs to make sure that people are speaking from the same page, and it would be enormously helpful to the American people if that messaging was more consistent.
Elsewhere, in France, lawmakers passed a bill that says you can't enter a restaurant, cafe, or many other public venues unless you're vaccinated. A negative test is no longer good enough. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. President Biden started the new year with a feistier, more combative tone toward Republicans, only to be reminded almost immediately that he is still battling with the members of his own party. After the gut punch regarding the filibuster from Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema last week, He's shown he's unable yet again to unite his party behind his agenda. Mr. Biden's latest setback raised questions over what he can achieve legislatively in Congress this year and whether he wasted political capital. It's a story by Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today. Joey, explain.
This marks the second time in less than a month where President Biden's inability to convince moderate Democrats in the Senate to get behind this legislative agenda has ended up spoiling the president's goals. A month ago, as you recall, he was trying to get passage of Build Back Better, his domestic spending plan, $1.85 trillion before the end of the year. That was upended when Senator Manchin in West Virginia announced abruptly that he could not back it in its current form. And then on Thursday, what we had is Kyrsten Sinema, the moderate Democratic senator from Arizona. She did a surprise and really stunning speech from the Senate floor saying that she could not support a carve out of the filibuster to support to vote for voting rights legislation. That was something that President Biden had called on Senate Democrats to back in a speech in Atlanta. And really embarrassingly for the president, it came less than an hour before he was he met with Senate Democrats in the Capitol to push them on this issue. Sinema essentially just pulled the rug out from under it, announcing her opposition. What I think we have here is two examples now where Biden has overshot what was really possible in this evenly divided Senate, in which Democrats do technically have control, but it's by the narrowest of margins. And it's created this situation where he's set expectations high for his base to get these things passed,
yeah,
but he's not been able to do so.
Why is it that President Biden can't persuade Senators Manchin or Sinema?
Well, that's the million-dollar question there, right? I mean, but the bottom line is he, I think the White House has banked too much on their ability to get them to change. I mean, this was not a new position that Sinema and Manchin actually followed up with a statement of his own also opposing, yeah, this filibuster carve-out. You know, they made this position clear months ago, but the White House, Biden, has, I think, overcalculated this idea that amid growing pressure from Democrats and liberals to change face that they would do so, and they put an enormous amount of stock in the president's ability to convince them with his speech and really renewed effort to support voting rights legislation that they could be swayed. And the fact of the matter is they can't be. I mean, it appears on this filibuster issue. I mean, Manchin, you know, of course, that's a state that in West Virginia that President Trump won by more than 30 points. He's kind of an anomaly in terms of a Democrat even possibly, holding power, holding a seat in a state that red. And Kyrsten Sinema is obviously, her calculus is that she was also voted by Arizona voters not to be a rubber stamp on Democratic issues, yeah, but take a middle of the road line. And she sees this as one of those issues.
We're speaking with Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today. He's written a piece about President Biden's failure to unite his own party again. So as you point out, so Build Back Better is a no-go at this point. Voting rights, a no-go at this point. As the president promised during his campaign to stop the coronavirus, that hasn't happened. What does he talk about as he marks his first year in office or the start of his second year?
Well, I think, and we heard this today from Press Secretary Jen Psaki in her press briefing, they're stressing that the economy is, besides inflation, that it has improved. Unemployment rate is down to 3.9%. And these are above expectations that most forecasters had coming out of the pandemic. You know, there has been, despite the Omicron variant on the rise, you know, they are touting the vaccination rollout and getting, you know, around 70% of all Americans vaccinated as a success. And, you know, they're also rolling out key components of the infrastructure bill that was the $1 trillion infrastructure bill that was signed into law just a couple months ago. That's almost become an afterthought amid some of the legislative losses of President Biden. But that's something they are stressing. The money, I think it's $25 billion of that money towards new bridges is getting dispersed today for the first time, which will go towards 15,000 bridge projects. And so they're trying to stress these moments. Make no mistake about it, as we're at the one-year mark, which will come up next week, of Biden's first of his time in office, he is at a very low point.
Thanks, Joey. Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today. 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A dangerous winter storm combining high winds and ice swept through parts of the southeast on Sunday, knocking out power, felling trees and fences, and coating roads with a dangerous glaze. Tens of thousands of customers are without power in Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida. Highway patrols reported hundreds of vehicle accidents, and a tornado ripped through a trailer park in Florida. Cecil Pendergrass is Lee County Commissioner.
Storm came through really quick, and as they do this, this is why the pressure of the tornadoes are created, because of the quick-moving storm.
The storm is now making its way through the northeast with snow, heavy rain, and wind gusts of up to 60 miles an hour.
Number two.
U.S. and British authorities are continuing to investigate the weekend standoff at a Texas synagogue that ended with an armed British national dead and a rabbi, crediting past security training for getting him and three members of his congregation out safely. Authorities identified the hostage taker as 44-year-old British national Malik Akram, who was killed Saturday night after the last hostages ran out of Congregation Beth Israel around 9 p.m. Governor Greg Abbott.
Law enforcement at every level. The local level, the state level, and the federal level. And thanks to the incredible team provided by the FBI, they were able to ensure every hostage got out alive and safe.
The investigation stretched to England, where police in Manchester announced two teenagers are in custody in connection with the standoff. Ukraine says Russia was behind a cyber attack that defaced its government websites and alleges that Russia is engaged in an increasing hybrid war against its neighbor. The statement came a day after Microsoft said dozens of computer systems at an unspecified number of Ukrainian government agencies had been infected with destructive malware disguised as ransomware. The attack comes as the threat of a Russian invasion of Ukraine looms and diplomatic talks to resolve the tense standoff appear stalled. Patrick Mahomes threw for 404 yards and five touchdowns as the Kansas City Chiefs sent Pittsburgh quarterback Ben Roethlisberger into his anticipated retirement with a 42-21 blowout of the Steelers last night in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. The 49ers held off the home team Cowboys 23-17 and was the Tampa Bay Bucks over the Eagles 31-15.
All right, thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. As you may have experienced, it's virtually impossible at the moment to hire anyone to do any repair, maintenance, or construction work on your home, no matter how badly you need it. Right now, repair people are like the hottest kids in high school, right? Attractive, yet unattainable. Funny tips on how to get on their schedule from Chris Frieswick, humor columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Chris, your take.
Well, basically, the column was designed to compare the tactics that one might use to attract the high school hottie to the tactics that one might use to attract the equally in demand and hot repair person of your choice.
Right.
It is extremely difficult to get any of these people to return your call, let alone to show up. They're super busy right now. The pandemic has made sure that everyone is more than well aware of all of the defects in their homes, and because we are spending so much time in them. And so, you know, construction and home remodeling and interior designers and anything to do with anything in your house, if there is a profession that deals with it, they are busier than they have ever been ever. And so I just thought it might be fun to, you know, go into the Wayback Machine and take a look at, like, how did you actually, like, insinuate your way into the life of that, like, prom king or prom queen that you were oogling as they strolled down the hallway past your locker and you looked on sort of like, why can't they look at me? And so I just sort of translated it into modern day with, I hope, some actual actionable advice.
Right.
And I think a lot of it's just common sense. You know, if you're nice to people, if you treat them with respect, if you treat them like the professionals they are, you know, you're more than likely to get a positive result. Like my mom used to say, more flies with honey than vinegar.
How about on the bribery front?
Yeah, bribery's good. Bribery's a good way to get really anything in life. I mean, parents use it with their children. Politicians use it with their, you know, donor, or donors use it with politicians.
Yeah.
And you should use it with your home repair people as well. You know, find out what they want. Everybody wants something. And, you know, if they're a true professional, they probably want a great review, or They want to, maybe they have kids who are the same age as yours, and you can take those children on an awesome play date and impress your repair person with how magnanimous and generous you are. And eventually word will get back to the repair person in question. Your name will be remembered with the bribery, I think, right, as long as it's legal.
Love it. We're speaking with Chris Frieswick, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, also deputy section editor for the Mansion section of the Journal. Her piece is called Household Repair Professionals Are Hot and in Demand. Here's how to win their heart. I love the part where you're talking about, there's a little bit of a song and dance here. And oh, by the way, it might take at least a month because you can't just jump in and say, hey, now that we're friends, come fix my fridge.
Right. I mean, you would never just call up the high school hottie and be like, I want you now. Like, you just that's like high school suicide, right? And you can't do that with the repair people either, because they'll be like, I don't know who you are. I'm busy. Go away. Click. You kind of have to ease your way in and like create a relationship and become friends, maybe hang out at their favorite watering hole, buy them a couple of brews or glasses of wine, and insinuate your way into their heart.
Cash still works, right? A promise of cash for their services.
Once you have attracted the repair person of your dreams, pay them on the way out the door. Or very soon thereafter, with as close to cash as you can manage, whether that's a check or actual cash money. There's so many of their clients that just aren't paying. You know, they go, they do the work, but then they just never see the money. It's like any small business person, the hardest part of that job is really getting paid. And so if you are identified as a person who pays cash, you're the customer who pays cash on delivery, then you will be remembered fondly.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Frieswick, humor columnist at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Podcasts have changed the way you get your news, entertainment, politics, everything. They've rewritten the script, literally. Well, there's another exciting development that's rewritten the script, too. Masterworks. Masterworks enables you to diversify your portfolio and potentially protect it from market volatility by investing in contemporary art. With Masterworks, they're the fintech startup shaking up the alternative investing landscape, letting you build a portfolio of fine art without spending millions. Basquiat, Picasso, Warhol, invest in paintings by iconic artists like these with Masterworks. Their industry-leading research team has created the first and only platform where anyone can buy and trade shares of paintings, giving you the same access enjoyed by some millionaires and billionaires for generations. And now our listeners get priority access to their latest offerings at masterworks.art/Gordon. Join a new generation of investors at masterworks.art/Gordon. See important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer. Uncomfortable work attire is a thing of the past. If you're still trapped in suits and ties, make it your New Year's resolution to go casual at work. But don't dress down. Get some casual style that fits anywhere. That's what Cuts Clothing is designed for, to fit you and any occasion perfectly. That's how I feel about my t-shirts from Cuts. They look and feel great. Buttery soft. They move with me whenever I'm at the mic or at the gym. And while I could go on about their custom-engineered Pika Tri-Blend fabric, you really have to wear it to understand how soft it is. It's the ultimate blend of high-quality cotton, polyester, and spandex. The result is what GQ magazine calls the only shirt worth wearing. And now it's worth even more because it's an even better value. Cuts Clothing is work leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S. cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Tired of trying to separate fact from fiction? Get your information from a source you can trust. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, January 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines on this Martin Luther King Day. The Texas synagogue hostage taker identified as a British man. Deadly storm hits the East Coast, causing widespread power outages and canceled flights. Omicron not peaking yet. University of Michigan fired its president for what it calls an inappropriate relationship with a subordinate. The Australian Open begins without the deported Novak Djokovic. Cardinals and Rams in what will be a first-ever Monday Night Football playoff game, and how to celebrate Betty White's 100th birthday. That story in about 20 minutes. The Supreme Court has stopped the Biden administration from enforcing a requirement that employees at large businesses be vaccinated against COVID or undergo weekly testing. At the same time, the court is allowing the administration to proceed with a vaccine mandate for most healthcare workers in the U.S. You may have heard about those rulings. What about the ripple effects of the court's decision? We're joined by Jonathan Bell, employment attorney and founder of Bell Law Group. John, your reaction?
The court got it 100% correct, and I'm glad to see it. This has nothing to do with being pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine. This has to do with the federal government's powers. Now, it was a split decision, clearly. For private sector employers, it was determined that the federal government, when they tried to use OSHA to issue these mandates, it was beyond or exceeded their powers. And the simple reason was OSHA can, in fact, issue some mandates, but it has to be relating to potential grave injury on the job. So, for example, if workers worked in a building with asbestos and things of that nature, OSHA is allowed to issue these types of mandates.
Yeah.
However, COVID, you can get that anywhere. It's not necessarily gotten at your work site. Meanwhile, with respect to the other part, where the Supreme Court ultimately found that the mandate was allowed, essentially, for healthcare workers, I agree with that as well, because it's all about money, Gordon. CMS provides money in the sense of Medicaid and Medicare through CMS to healthcare providers. A majority of healthcare providers accept Medicaid and Medicare. In accepting that, CMS has the right to dictate mandates with respect to whether or not employees or patients are in a safe environment.
Yeah. Does this become less of a legal issue as this new coronavirus becomes endemic?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, you still have, you know, the confusion here is that there are some people who live in states where there's local mandates and state mandates, and they're under the impression that now those mandates are unconstitutional, and they're not. There was a 1905 case, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, where the Supreme Court ruled that state and local governments can, in fact, issue mandates. So if you live in one of those states, you have to still follow the mandate. As far as private sector employers, they're free, whether or not they live in one of these states or not that have mandates, they're free to issue their own mandates. So if your employer says you have to be vaccinated or you have to wear masks or weekly testing, you have to do that unless you could always quit and find a new job.
We're speaking with John Bell, employment attorney and founder of Bell Law Group in New York. We're talking about the ripple effects of the Supreme Court rejecting President Biden's vaccine or test mandate. Where do we go from here? How do you see this?
So the way I see this is the fact that most employers are applauding the decision, and they don't want the federal government to have the authority to overstep their boundaries. However, the way I see this played out, even though I agree with the Supreme Court decision, and as far as whether or not they have the power with the mandate with respect to the healthcare workers, the problem we're going to see, Gordon, is the fact that people are getting sick and they need to go to hospitals and physicians. And the problem is what we're going to see across the country is a lot of healthcare workers are going to resign or be terminated because of the fact that they're going to be refusing to get the vaccine. So at a time when we need the healthcare workers most, there's going to be a decline in the number of them to treat us. On the flip side, if somebody comes to be treated for a non-COVID related reason, they don't want to get COVID from your healthcare physician or provider. So you can kind of see both sides of the argument. So I imagine we're still going to see some people that are very, very upset with the Supreme Court ruling.
Boy, I remember a time, and it didn't seem too long ago, when employers actually wanted that type of cover from the federal government, right, to help them. Then it just seemed like, I don't know, it just got to be too much. It was just corona fatigue. You know, we get tired of all this stuff.
Yes, I agree with you, and I think that's what's going on. And also, even though it seems like the Omicron is a lot more contagious, it seems as though people who are getting sick are ultimately okay. They don't need the medical care and medical treatment. So I agree with you. I think the fatigue coupled with the fact that the strength, even though the contagious aspect has gotten a lot worse, the strength of the virus with respect to the symptoms seems to has been declining.
Thanks, John. John Bell, employment attorney and founder of Bell Law Group. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it was a whirlwind weekend for football fans with five NFL playoff games to keep track of. Though while the vast majority of us got to do it from our couch, there was one woman forced to hit the road to make it to two games in one day. Donna Kelsey, the mom of star players Jason and Travis Kelsey, made it her mission to be at both of her son's games yesterday. Jason with the Eagles in Tampa at 1 p.m. Eastern and Travis with the Chiefs in Kansas City at 8 p.m. In between, Kelsey's adventures involved two time zones, two airports, and a rickshaw, Uber, and a request from the NFL for a police escort to ensure she made it to Arrowhead Stadium in time to watch at least part of the game. The NFL tweeted Kelsey's progress as she made her way from game to game. The first tweet showed Donna smiling in the Florida sun wearing green Eagles gear. Jeez. Then the account showed a picture of part of the rickshaw she had to take from Raymond James Stadium to connect with her Uber so she could make it to the airport in time for her flight. After arriving at the airport, Donna tweeted that her flight was delayed. Then came a picture showing her on a commercial flight following a uniform change into Chiefs colors. At one point, a fan jokingly asked why no one told her that both of her son's games were on TV, to which she replied, "Where is your sense of adventure, young man?" See the wild card there was obviously the airport and the flight with all the flight delays and cancellations we've had recently. That could have sabotaged the entire thing right there.
That's like a 2-hour flight. Tampa to Kansas City,
yeah,
roughly?
Probably something like that.
Wow, how she pulled that off is amazing. That's you almost have to tell Jason in Tampa that I'm not going to be able to say hello after the game.
Right? Well, yeah, sure.
As the final whistle blows, or if you're getting annihilated, I'm just going to have to leave early to try to catch my flight.
Yeah, right? I think she's dispensing with the pleasantries in this situation and just wanted to see it, get in the car, and get out of there. And again, the airport really is the place where it really could have gone south quickly. I mean, her flight was delayed as it is. So.
Yeah, and the traffic.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
We saw some of the clips. I mean, Kansas City had the weather, right, and all that stuff. That'd be a bucket list item, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Catch the 1 o'clock game.
Yeah.
And then fly somewhere, or I guess drive, depending on the geography, to catch the 8 o'clock Sunday night.
Yes, could be fun.
Think about that, yeah.
Have to sleep for a couple days after that, though. And many people know, Gordon, it's never, ever a good idea to make fun of someone when something bad happens to them, because it's an open invitation for the universe to do the same or worse to you. That's a lesson learned by one husband in Indiana whose misfortune is now forever viewable on YouTube. In the clip, the man is seen on his doorbell camera making fun of his wife, who slipped and fell down the steps. Moments later, the man slips and falls down those same steps, taking a seat right next to his wife, who, despite the bruises, can't help but laugh at her taunting husband's misfortune, and according to the clip, couldn't wait to post it to social media, where it's now been viewed over 13,000 times.
Nice.
I guess there was some ice that he couldn't see there.
Yes.
She slipped and fell on the ice, and he didn't see the ice.
Yeah.
Like, ha ha, look at you, you slipped and fell, and then took a seat right next to her.
I think if I understood the video correctly.
Yeah.
He lost a sandwich
yes.
over the right side railing as he went down, then went and picked it up. Did that look like that? Does that look like a sandwich to you?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That was still intact or something?
That was his main concern. I mean, that'd be my concern as well if I lost a sandwich. I'd want to know exactly where that sandwich went to, but I probably wouldn't eat it afterwards.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. A new study has found that olive oil could help you live longer. The study, published today in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, found that people who consume more than half a tablespoon of olive oil per day have been found to have a lower risk of dying from a handful of diseases. A press release said, compared to participants who rarely or never consumed olive oil, those who ate the most olive oil were found to have a 19% lower risk of dying from cardiovascular disease, 17% from cancer, 29% lower risk of dying from a neurodegenerative disease, and 18% lower risk from a respiratory disease. Researchers found, by the way, that participants who consume more olive oil were also more likely to be physically active, less likely to smoke, had a greater consumption of fruits and vegetables, and were more likely to have Southern European or Mediterranean ancestry. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A winter storm packing heavy snow, ice, gale force winds, and tornadoes is making its way from the south to the northeast, leaving hundreds of thousands without power in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Two people died Sunday when their car drove off the road east of Raleigh, North Carolina. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
As much as 8 to 12 inches of snow has fallen in some counties, and significant icing is causing trouble in the central part of the state. Conditions vary across North Carolina and are dangerous in many areas.
Over 7,000 flights were canceled yesterday. The storm now making its way through New England, dropping snow, sleet, and heavy rain.
Number two.
The FBI has identified British national 44-year-old Malik Akram as the person who took hostages in a standoff at a Texas synagogue. Two teenagers were also arrested in Britain in connection with the weekend hostage situation. President Biden notes that none of the four hostages at Congregation Beth Israel in Colleyville was injured.
And thank God we have such a professional FBI, as well as the local cooperation, I was told, was incredible.
Authorities did not discuss how Akram died, but said in a statement the shooting would be reviewed.
Number three.
COVID infections are soaring again at nursing homes because of the Omicron wave, and deaths are climbing too, leading to new restrictions on family visits and a renewed push to get more residents and staff members vaccinated and boosted. But New York Governor Kathy Hochul sees some positive signs.
We have a positivity rate of about 13% statewide. That is a dramatic improvement over our statewide average just a couple weeks ago of 23%. So what a decline we've seen.
Nursing homes reported a near record of 32,000 COVID cases among residents in the week ending January 9th. An underwater volcano near Tonga has erupted for the third time in 4 days, potentially threatening the ability of surveillance flights to assess the damage to the Pacific Island nation following Saturday's massive eruption and tsunami. Saturday's eruption was likely the biggest recorded anywhere on the planet in more than 30 years. Charles McGee, a Tuskegee Airman who flew 409 fighter combat missions over 3 years, died yesterday at the age of 102. McGee graduated from flight school in June 1943 and in 1944 joined the all-black fighter group known as the Red Tails. He flew 136 missions as the group accompanied bombers over Europe.
Imagine the stories he told.
Yeah, man, right? That's geez. A lot of years.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Just weeks away from turning 100, Betty White was planning to spend her upcoming birthday watching a film about her life with friends. It was a shock when she died last month, so CNN put together 5 ways to show some love starting today on what would have been her 100th birthday. Number one, you can find a local theater playing Betty White, a celebration. Number two, watch her host Saturday Night Live from May of 2010.
You know, I'm not new to live TV. In 1952, I started my first live sitcom, which was Life of Elizabeth. And, of course, back then, we didn't want to do it live. We just didn't know how to tape things.
And also watch Honoring Betty White on Hallmark. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.